Hello, and welcome to another episode of Endeavors. On today's show, actress Eve Harlow talks about her new film, The Tomorrow Man, while from the band Teenage Bottle Rocket, Cody Templeman talks about the band's new album, Stay Rad, and what it is like with life after Brandon. That's all coming up on Endeavors. But first, we're going to start you off with the song from Teenage Bottle Rocket's Stay Rad. This is Creature from the Black Metal Lagoon. That was Creature from the Black Metal Lagoon by Teenage Bottle Rocket, and we'll hear from the band's Cody Templeman a little later on in the program. But right now, my first guest is a Canadian actress who has appeared in such television shows as Kyle XY, The Andromeda Strain, The Guard, in which she was nominated for a Gemini Award for Best Featured Supporting Actress, and won the Leo Award for Best Supporting Performance by a Female in a Dramatic Series, the television film The Farm, Fringe, Caprica, R.L. Stine's The Haunting Hour, Flashpoint, Lost Girl, The Killing, The 100, Unreal, Heroes Reborn, 12 Monkeys, Ray Donovan, Rogue, the upcoming series Next, and a reoccurring role in the Marvel series Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the forthcoming legal drama, The Jury. She has also appeared in such films as Juno, Jennifer's Body, The Tall Man, and Lost After Dark. She appears in the new film, The Tomorrow Man, starring John Lithgow and Blythe Danner, which is in theaters now. This is my conversation with Eve Harlow. Eve Harlow, hello, good afternoon. Thanks for joining me today.
No problem. Thank you for having me. So you are in a new film, The Tomorrow Man. Was this in terms of getting this part, was this, would you say it was a normal process for you in terms of auditioning and then callbacks and then finding out you actually landed the gig?
No, you know what actually happened was I went in for an audition for a different project, and it just happened to be the same casting director who was casting both. So I went in for, I actually ended up getting the other thing too, with the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So I got that part, and then the casting director said, you know what, you would actually be really good for this a part in this film that I'm casting. So she asked me to come back like 2 days later. And I auditioned for it and for The Tomorrow Man and then got that. So yeah, it's kind of cool.
And you get to the first time we see you get to be in a scene opposite Blythe Danner, and you have a lot of scenes in the film with her. Working with somebody of that caliber, talk about that experience.
I think initially it was kind of scary, just because you're coming in to work with, like you said, somebody who's been around for so long and work with so many people. But then she's so lovely that it kind of all of that dissipates really quickly, and she talks a lot about her husband who passed away, like Bruce, and she's just like so much love for him, she was just like talking about him all the time. So when you're seeing somebody just be so human, you're like, okay, this is a human being. This isn't some immortal being who I can't comprehend. So yeah, it was, and the anxiety went away really quickly just because she's great.
Does someone who has that much experience, does that make it easier for you as an actor? Like, did she make it comfortable for you in your scenes?
Yeah, it's funny, like I've noticed when that it's working with, like, I think the longer people have been around, the more open they are to allowing the other person to do, like, it's kind of like when the camera's not on them, they're still going to be there for you, which is really nice. And I know that sounds like something that everybody should do all the time, but they don't, and there's so little ego. And so, and I think also just, yeah, because she's worked with like so many people, she's kind of, seen it all, been there, done that. But she was really welcoming and just really kind. And yeah, I felt totally at ease and, could deliver my lines in whatever way I wanted, differently each take, because yeah, I was given that freedom. And also from like Noble, the director too, really allowing me to do whatever I wanted. So that was fun.
When we first meet your character, she seems, maybe a wee bit cynical, a wee bit sarcastic, maybe that she doesn't love her job all that much. How would you describe her?
I think sure, those things, but also I think she has like a real love for Ronnie, the Blythe's character. And so it is, there is all that like jade, being jaded and cynical and, very 21st century youth kind of thing. But I think underneath that there's like a love for Ronnie. And so I think that, yeah, like more layers to it than not. And she's obviously concerned for her too, because she comes in, well, can't give anything away. Anyway, I think there are a couple different scenes that showcase her ability to feel things.
We mentioned Blythe Danner, of course. The other star of the film is John Lithgow. What did you like about the experience of working with somebody like him?
Like, I honestly think this is why the movie works so well, is because their chemistry is so great, because they're both such like cool humans. He was just very easygoing, and like, one of the days that we were working together, he had to, we were like, oh, okay, we have to like get this shot because he has to be on a plane. He was like, yeah, sorry about these guys, and he was going to the Golden Globes, so he was like, sorry to inconvenience everyone. I just am, you know, going to be off to this, like, huge event. And this movie was so small, you know, to see this guy who was, like, be so gracious and so humble. It was really nice. And it's, I just think it's, you know, a lot of people get this idea that the longer people are in this industry, the more diva-esque they get. And these two proved to be the polar opposite of that, you know. And it was just all, like, everybody was laughing and cracking jokes all the time, and there wasn't any of that, like, any of the horror stories that you hear about people who've been in this industry for forever, you know. It was really just nice to see that and be around that energy.
Romantic dramas can fall into a trap of maybe getting a little bit, you know, saccharine or sentimental or a little bit schmaltzy. But what did you like? What do you think worked about this particular script and this particular film, apart from the chemistry between Blythe and John?
I think what I liked about them was that they're both fairly eccentric people, you know, and I think that, you know, you have a lot of these kinds of, rom-coms written from when, like, a young person's perspective, and then when people are young, it's like, oh, their eccentricities are, like, cute and charming and stuff, and then when you see it in older people, they're just like, oh, that's kind of weird. But the truth is, like, as we grow older, our eccentricities don't just, you know, fade away. They very much stay there. So I think it was really cool to see Noble embrace that as a writer and be like, okay, I'm going to show these people for who they really are. And it was so funny because when I watched it for the first time, I didn't realize how funny it would be. And it's because they're both such weirdos. You're like, what the hell is going on? But in the, like, the most, like, it's so genuine and authentic, and you're, and it's great. That's what I liked about it. You're like, oh, this is, it's like dating and starting to fall for someone is just as awkward, like, when you get older as it is when you're young. And I think that's what's great about it.
You know, I think, ask any actor and they'll tell you that they do have certain eccentricities that they engage in when they perform. With this role and with all your roles, how much of yourself would you say is in each character that you play?
Good question. I honestly, I think that every actor brings themselves to every part, you know. I think there's no, like, getting away from that. That's just, like, you bring your or whatever it is, you know. And as to how much of every character is, I think, like, a good amount, you know, because you just use your imagination, and, like, any person could go down multiple paths, right? It's just the choices that we've made in life. So, and, like, I'm lucky in that every character that's different that I get to play, it's like, oh, investigating the part of me that could have been this if I had made different choices in life, you know? So it's just living out different versions of myself.
Now, the character of Ed obviously believes that the apocalypse or some imminent disaster is coming that he's preparing for, and depending on who you talk to, that is slightly relevant today with all the environmental doomsday talk that we're hearing. But I guess in the overall cultural moment that we're living in, where do you think this film fits in that conversation?
It's like, it's a great movie because they both have so much anxiety and neurosis about life and what's happened to them, and that even though they have all of this, they're still able to set aside these, you know, things in order to really see one another and find love and support in one another. And I think that's what's wonderful, and I think that's what's missing nowadays in our political climate and everything. and that, like, we, it's very much of, like, us versus them mentality, and maybe if we start looking at each other as human beings and, like, reaching out for one another, it would be a lot more beneficial than pointing fingers, you know?
We sort of touched on this earlier, but love is some, you know, and dating is something that's generationless, if you will. Did you see any similarities or anything strike you that you didn't thought about before, about maybe similarities between, you know, our generation dating versus the older generation trying to date?
No, like, in that, I mean, they go about it in very different ways, you know, obviously, but it's the same kind of, like, there's one, I mean, I'm not giving anything away, but there's just there's one moment when, like, Blythe's character does something, and John Lithgow's character is like, oh my god, that's just, like, so amazing, and that, and I think that that's exactly the feeling, you know, when you start dating someone, and they do something that's really small, and, like, seems insignificant, but it moves you in such a way, you're like, oh my god, this person is my person, they're perfect, you know, it's kind of lovely to see that that feeling doesn't change, it stays the same, you know, so as, sure, we're moving in, you know, obviously we have 21st century dating and love, you know, we got the apps, we got all those things, but the very core of what love is and how another person makes you feel, it stays the same.
You know, and I guess, what do you, another thing that you mentioned that you were doing, before this was that you actually auditioned for, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as well.
Yeah.
What was the Marvel Universe experience like for you?
Superpowers, which is kind of upsetting. I'm like, come on, man, it's the second time I've been on a show with, like, people with superpowers, and both times I did not have superpowers, so that was kind of a bummer. But no, that set was, like, loads of fun, mostly because, like, the cast was just really great, and the showrunners are really cool. I think the key thing is, I don't know, a project could be really cool on paper, but it all comes down to the people that you work with, you know, so when you come on a set, and if everyone's a jerk, like, you don't want to be there no matter how cool the project is, you know, because nobody is there. I just really think that, like, film and television is such a collaboration that if people come on and they're just, yeah, mean or unpleasant, you don't want to be there, right? But it's all about, like, the relationships that you build and the communication, and so, yeah, being a, I mean, I'm going on a tangent here, but I feel like the Marvel Universe was great because I was working with really cool people, you know? But I want a superpower next time.
Oh, if you could choose any, what would your go-to superpower be?
Definitely teleportation. Because the amount of times that I've been, like, freaking out about being late somewhere and being like, God, I wish I could teleport. Like, it's happened way too many times for me not to be like, that is the power that I want, because I would use it all the time. It'd be great. Do you have one?
I mean, that's a really good one too, like teleportation or maybe like flight or something like that. Just somewhere where I could get to my next destination faster, I think, you know? Because I'm all...
Like, with flight, it's dangerous because it's like, okay, but then are other people going to be able to see you? And then are they going to want to, like, you know, imprison you to study you and your ability to fly? And then how fast do you go? Can you take other people with you? Like, there are all these, like, caveats that you have to think about.
Fair. All right.
I've thought about this a lot.
I don't think a lot of people realize this, but working in television is very, very, very different than working in film, obviously. As someone who's done both, how would you describe the differences between the two?
I like both for different reasons, and I think the biggest thing is just the time thing, and that, like, you know, when you're working on a TV show for a few episodes, you get to, like, build more of a relationship with the people that you're working with. So it's more, yeah, there's just, like, more time invested in. You feel like you've built up a little community while you're there, and you get kind of more into the, you know, becomes your day-to-day thing. Whereas with a movie, you're in and out. You know, it's like, oh, a couple weeks here, a week there, and then that's it, you're done. But I find that, yeah, I don't know. I think that's just that's the biggest difference is the time thing, you know? But then also, if you have a great connection with somebody on a film set, then that lasts for a long time, too. So I think it's, yeah, it all depends. I think the biggest difference, like I said before, is the people that you're working with, you know, and I found that that has been the real, what I've noticed, yeah, the difference for me in projects is just, like, whether I like the people that I work with or not. And I've been incredibly lucky that I've had mostly really great experiences.
Out of all the superhero films that have come out in the last, you know, decade, two decades, do you have a favorite?
Okay, so full disclosure, I don't really, I haven't kept up with the 22 movies, or 22 Marvel movies, I haven't watched them all. I would say I probably lean towards more, like, I really like dark stuff, so kind of think, like, Batman, you know, like, when Heath Ledger was the Joker, like, I really dig that kind of stuff. Like, I like when there's, because I feel with that one, there's a real threat.
Right.
You know, like, there is something really scary about that, and so when the hero succeeds, there's even, that's, like, that success is celebrated even more, you know? So I would say, like, that would be my favorite. But then I just like the last Avengers movie, the 3-hour one, I definitely did not watch that one, you know. Sure. But I also, and I would say that I really like the X-Men universe. I really dig them, also just because comic book wise they were so revolutionary when they were coming out. Sure. You know, it was the first comic book to like introduce a LGBTQ character and like a religious character. Like, they were really at the forefront of creating these kinds of characters, so I really dig what those guys do.
We've been talking a lot about love in relation to the film, both as an actor and as a, you know, watcher and consumer of stories. What do you like? What do you enjoy about watching two people fall in love?
I think it, like, it shines a light on humanity, you know, and the good of it. Because I think, again, like you said, you know, before, we're living in this time where I feel like every headline that we read is all about, like, the coming apocalypse and destruction of the world and stuff. So when you take some time to just, like, sit and watch two people fall in love, I mean, it's pretty great. You're like, oh, there is goodness in the world, you know, and it's a glimmer of hope.
Well, the film is The Tomorrow Man, with John Lithgow and Blythe Danner, and my guest Eve Harlow, and it is out right now. Eve, thanks so much for your time this afternoon.
Dan, thanks for having me.
All right, well, enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, you too.
All right, cheers, bye.
That was my conversation with actress Eve Harlow. Her film, The Tomorrow Man, is in theaters now. We're going to have another song by Teenage Bottle Rocket off their album Stay Rad. This is The First Time I Was on Acid Was the Last Time I Was on Acid. Here you go.
The first time that I did acid was the last time that I did acid. The room started spinning around. Thought I might die, shit was shutting down. An evil demon came to me in the tree. His toes turned to a staircase, he was laughing at me. All my friends let go and it's on. So I climbed up the stairs to figure out why. They're gonna put me away. Break!
That was the first time that I did acid, was the last time I did acid, and that's by the band Teenage Bottle Rocket off their new album, Stay Rad. For punk aficionados, they will have definitely heard of Teenage Bottle Rocket, a great band from the town of Laramie, Wyoming. And if Laramie, Wyoming sounds familiar, that's also the town that Matthew Shepard was from and the setting for the great play, The Laramie Project. Stay Rad is Teenage Bottle Rocket's 8th full-length album, if I am correct. They have also released 1 live album and 6 extended plays. A-Bomb, Utilate Me, Ice Age Walked in Line, American Deutschbag, In My Youth, and Going Back to Wyo. They have toured with such groups as NoFX, Mighty Mighty Bosstones, and Me First and the Gimme Gimme Gimmes, as well as Methadones, Chicks Digits, and the Mr. T Experience. The band was started in 2000 by twin drummers Ray and Brandon Carlisle, and sadly, in November of 2015, Brandon was found unresponsive in his Fort Collins home, and passed away 4 days later in his sleep. 2 months later, they were joined by Darren Chuka as the new drummer. A few days ago, I got to speak with guitarist and vocalist Cody Templeman about the new album, Stay Rad, and how it's been since life after Brandon, what Darren has brought to the band, and also the songwriting contributions of bassist Miguel Chen on this album. Here is my conversation with Teenage Bottle Rocket's Cody Templeman. Cody Templeman, hello, welcome. Thanks for being here, man.
You betcha.
So, Teenage Bottle Rocket, you guys have a new album out, Stay Rad. This is a very fun album, I found. Where did this project start from for you guys as a band?
It started like all the others. Like, we just write what we write and then record it, and that's pretty much it.
Would you say that you have a specific writing process when it comes to putting an album together? Like, I know Ray does a lot of stuff. I know Miguel wrote some stuff for this album. But is there a specific process that works well for you guys, or is it just sort of someone throws an idea out and you figure out what works?
Yeah, we kind of like Ray writes all of his songs and I write all of mine, and then we just demo them and like put them all together and like show the band and stuff. And like on this one, like you said, Miguel wrote some songs, and he called me up and he's like, "You want to demo these for me?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." So he sent me a recording of him playing guitar and singing his songs, and then I demoed him and sent it back to him to see what he wanted to change and this and that. And yeah, so that was definitely a new element for this record, which turned out good. So
I love some of the titles. You know, you've got The First Time That I Did Acid Was The Last Time I Did Acid, Night of the Knuckleheads, Creature from the Black Metal Lagoon. What sort of influences do you pull from other sources when you write songs like these?
I don't know. I mean, I can't really speak for Ray. Like, I know Acid was supposedly a true story, some of the stuff in there. So I guess he would pull from Acid on that one. And I don't know, like Creature from the Black Metal Lagoon. Like, I just I like black metal a lot, and I kind of wanted to write a song that was, you know, kind of tried to pay homage to that scene, but not cheapen it in any way, but make it kind of funny still.
Now, is it true that in a way you sort of came up with the title for this album? Because I know Ray wanted to call it the White Album, and then you remembered something that your roadie used to say?
Yeah, like our old tour manager, Corey Nesbitt, had this hat that he always wore, and it said Stay Rad on it, and he always wore hats till they were just fucking gross and grimy and falling off his head, pretty much, so... But that one was always pretty hilarious to me, and I was like, that'd be kind of a cool title for a record.
I ran it by
Ray, and he was like, yeah, that's cool.
There definitely is, I think, a, you know, like a lot of your stuff, definitely a party vibe to this record. You guys clearly have fun when you make it. What is your best sort of tour party story?
Tough one. There's been a few. Gosh, I'm drawing blanks right now. Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to think on that one. That's a pretty hard one to figure out.
I heard you recorded when talking about this record. You said you wanted to sell a bazillion copies and spend all the money on useless shit. So.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that would be nice. If I did make $1 billion, that's probably what I'd spend it on. But, yeah. No, we just, I don't know. We do it to have fun, and, you know, we hope it translates to, like, the fans and stuff, you know. Like, just have fun, I guess.
What would your if you sold a lot of albums, what would your first vanity purchase be?
I'd probably buy a house.
Fair.
If I made a ton of money, that'd probably be the first thing on the list.
All right. Well, you know, I suppose a house is a good investment for especially for artists.
Yeah, and then after that it would be probably comics and records and shit like that.
Okay. What comics are you sort of into these days?
I've been getting into the new Conan stuff, like that Marvel's doing with Jason Aaron writing it. It's pretty good stuff, and a lot of Image stuff, like I can't even think now. Like Kill or Be Killed and East of West and stuff like that.
You know, we're seeing a lot of these superhero movies and TV shows on the screen now. Are you a fan of those? Do you have a favorite one of those that you like? While we're on the subject of comics.
Yeah, I mean, I never really got into too much of the superhero comics and stuff, so a lot of that stuff I have no idea about, but I enjoy them. Like, I usually go with my father-in-law. Like, he used to be into comics, and so we'll go check out all the new stuff, and you know, yeah, I don't know. Guardians of the Galaxy, I thought was pretty awesome.
And I know there, actually, one that I'm excited for is the new Watchmen TV series. I heard that's supposed to be pretty good.
Yeah, I heard that's supposed to be awesome too, and I'm pretty stoked to get into it. For sure. That was definitely one of the movies I thought they did a really good job with, as far as translating the comic book. Even at night, there's so many people that bag on it, you know, like the true purists or whatever, but I thought it was good.
Do you find that there's, I don't know, some sort of relationship between comic books and punk music, whether it's in the people who create them or the audience that consumes them?
I guess it depends, like, what genre of punk rock you're talking, you know? I mean, obviously, somebody who listens to, you know, like, Leftover Crack probably isn't much of a comic book fan, but I definitely think, like, Ramones-style stuff kind of has an element of that to it, you know?
I'm wondering, am I allowed to ask you about Brandon and, you know, how the impact that his passing had on the band at all?
Yeah, it was rough, you know. He was like one of the driving forces of the band, and he and Ray were, I mean, they were twins, so obviously that was hard. And you know, they started that band together, and it's always kind of been like their band, you know. So it was definitely a pretty hard blow to take, and it still is, you know, when you think about it. But when all that stuff happened, we were, you know, we took some time to think about what we were going to do, and we all realized that Brandon would probably want us to keep doing it, you know. That's what we decided to do.
And what has Darren what has Darren brought to the band since he's been brought on board?
Darren's awesome. He's really funny, and he's like really fun to hang out with. So it was pretty cool to find somebody like that who's a good drummer and who could also hang, and that I think all of us look forward to hanging out with whenever we get together for touring or recording and stuff. Like, it's always a really good time, and he's a great dude.
Now, I know you folks are coming into Canada next week. You're doing a couple of shows in Quebec, and then you're here in Toronto on June the 15th. What do you like about coming to Canada?
Like, you guys have some good candy bars up there. You got the Coffee Crisp, that's nice. I always try to go for that when I'm in Canada. And I did an interview the other day that asked about Toronto, and there's some good comic book shops in Toronto that I always try to hit up when I'm there. But yeah, I don't know, Canada's awesome. All our shows up there have always been good, and it's always fun.
Few good comic book shops, and there's a lot of really good independent record stores still kicking around here as well, so.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out.
But just be warned that this, if you're in town on the day when the Raptors play, the city's going to be absolutely mental.
That's all right.
Yeah, I've heard that other than cities on the West Coast, most of the states are in the Raptors' corner. Is that true? Do you pay attention to any of that?
No. Who are the Raptors?
Yeah, because I guess because Golden State's won so much, everyone's just like, we want Toronto to win, but I don't know.
Oh, the basketball or something?
Yeah. It's our one basketball team, and they made the finals for the first time, so that's why the city's going crazy.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Congratulations on that. Yeah, I don't really follow basketball, but yeah, that's cool.
Fair.
Canada.
Would you say that you have a favorite track? Like, if you could pick one, could you pick a favorite track off of Stay Rad?
Oh, man. I'd have to see what they are. Hold on a second. Let me see what I got to work with here real quick. A favorite track. I'd probably say I want to kill Clint Carlin.
Okay. What do you think it is about that song that works so well for you?
I just think it's really funny. Like, Clint Carlin was our old merch guy and he just had enough and he quit, and but we used to fling him all kinds of shit all the time, and like we all love the guy dearly, and but we have like a pretty rough sense of humor, so he was the butt of a lot of jokes and stuff. And when I wrote that song, I was demoing it, and I sent him an email, and I was like, when you get a break from work, I need you to record yourself saying, dude, what the fuck, and just make it sound like you're disgusted and kind of mad. And so he did it, and then I put it in the song, and then I sent the demo back to him, and he was like, oh, this is the nicest thing anybody's ever done for me, he's like, except for the part about you wanting to kill me and all.
The album itself is great, and Teenage Bottle Rocket is going to be in Toronto on June the 15th, if I am correct. And then before that, you guys are in Quebec City and Montebello as well. Cody Timmelman, thanks so much for your time this afternoon.
Yeah, man, thank you.
All righty, man, have a good day. Cheers.
You too. Later.
That was my conversation with Cody Timmelman of Teenage Bottle Rocket. That about does it for me today. My thanks to Cody Timmelman and Eve Harlow. On Wednesday, I have a feature interview with singer-songwriter Sky Wallace, and we'll get into all things what it's like being a female in rock music, her new album, which is self-titled, and her just recently winning a DMDS Yangaroo sponsored contest at Canadian Music Week last month. So stay tuned for that. And then later on next week, we have actress Rebecca Ramon about the new web series, her new web series. So stay tuned for that. We're going to take you out with one more song by Teenage Bottle Rocket off their album Stay Rad. This is Cody's personal favorite, I Want to Kill Clint Carlin. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Bye for now.